I will start with a historical survey and then explain some conjectures. So I first start by giving the state of the art on the topic. The properties of Euler beta and gamma function, and I am interested in deciding whether the values are algebraic or transcendental. The oldest result, because I start with a historical survey, is something which was already mentioned in the previous talk, and it goes back to 1882, when Lindemann proved the transcendence of pi, because it's known that the gamma of one half is the square root of pi. So the first result is due to Lindemann, who proved that gamma of one half is a transcendental number. As you see, gamma of one half occurs as a special value of the logarithm, and the proof of the transcendence of pi does not use the properties of the gamma function. And it is something which we will see is still the case. We are not able to use the gamma function, the beta function, as such, but we use the fact that gamma at rational points are given by periods. So the word period is an essential tool in this topic. And the periods were introduced by Kontsevich and Zagier. And in the paper in 2000, they define the period in two different ways, and they claim that the two definitions are equivalent, and I don't know anyone who is able to prove that they are equivalent, but they say that obviously they are equivalent. Anyway, we can say that a period is an integral of an algebraic function, where the algebraic function is defined by polynomial equation with algebraic coefficients. And it is the integral on the domain which is defined by inequalities involving only algebraic numbers. And so there are some trivial relations among periods, and what they conjecture is that these relations among periods are the only algebraic relations among periods. In other terms, that if you have a relation among periods, then you can deduce it from the standard relation. Well, it is the same thing which will happen later when we will see the other conjectures on the gamma function, where we will see that these conjectures say that the relations are the only which are obvious, which are deduced from the standard one. I was puzzled at the beginning when I read the paper by Kontsevich and Zagier to know whether it's possible to give a statement which is mathematically sound and to explain exactly what it means that any algebraic relation comes from the relation among the periods. But Cartier explained this to me, and the precise definition is the following. You take the free algebra, which is generated by symbols, and the symbols are given by the integral of algebraic functions over cycles or over domains defined by equations. So you take a free algebra generated by symbols, the one which gives convergent integral. Then you take the ideal of relation which are spanned by the standard relation, and you take the quotient, and the conjecture is that this quotient embeds by the specialization into the real or complex numbers. So it makes sense. And among the properties of periods, Kontsevich and Zagier explained, for example, to give example, that all algebraic numbers are periods. And a little bit later in the paper, they say, if you want to prove that a number is transcendental, a good thing is to start by proving that it is a period, which is interesting, because if the number is algebraic, then it is a period. So if you expect it is transcendental, and if you prove that it is a period, you do not deduce anything. But the reason is that if you want to prove that a number like gamma of one half is a transcendental number, you start by proving that it is a period, and then you work with the periods. So this is what will happen with the gamma values, and I will say a little bit more about that. After the result of Lindemann, the first result on the transcendence of gamma values was given in 1931 by Ziegel, who proved the result on elliptic functions. And again, it was the first result on transcendent values of elliptic functions. So he took an elliptic function of Weierstrass, P, which had the invariant G2, G3, which are algebraic. And he considers the fundamental periods, well, a pair of fundamental periods. And what he proved is that at least one of omega 1, omega 2 is transcendental. So why is this related with gamma values? It is related by taking some example. If you take the period of say the elliptic curve will satisfy the equation p prime square equal 4p3 minus 4p, then this elliptic curve has g2 which is 4 and g3 which is 0. And the period is computed by an integral. Maybe I could explain why the periods occur as such before giving the formula. If you do complex analysis and if you know what is a period, usually a period of an analytic function is a number omega such that f of z plus omega is equal to f of z. This is the classical meaning of the word period. And the definition of Kontsevich and Zagier is that a period is an integral. And the connection between them is that if you take a function which satisfies a differential equation, then the period will occur as integrals. For example, if you take the exponential function, exponential of z, the derivative of exponential of z is exponential of z. And you can phrase it by taking the inverse of the exponential, which is the logarithm. So the logarithm of t is 1 over t. And if you take the integral on t equal 1 of dt over t, so you integrate the derivative of the inverse of the exponential, then you obtain 2 pi I. And so the connection between periods and in this sense and periods in the sense of an integral comes from this example, but it is the same exactly for what is here. This function p has two periods which satisfy p of z plus omega equal p of z. Well, there is a lattice of periods, so there are two fundamental periods. And so this is the period in the sense which is for the function, but the periods are obtained as an integral of so you take the, you inverse that, and you have dt divided by square root of 43 minus 40. So there are two fundamental periods. There is one which is real and the other which is imaginary. And the one which is real is by taking the integral from 1 to infinity. In fact, it's omega 1 over 2 because we take the roots of the polynomial 43 minus 40, which is t minus 40, t minus 1, t plus 1. And the root 1 and infinity give a real period, and the other period, omega 2, is I omega 1. And so, thanks to his result, Siegel deduces that this period here is a transcendental number, but this period can be computed in terms of the beta function. And so the corollary is that the number integral from 1 to infinity of dt of the square root of 1 of 1 minus t squared, 1 minus, no, 40 t cubed minus 40. So this number is a transcendental number, but this number is also 1 half of beta of 1 quarter and 1 half. And it is also gamma of 1/4 square divided by square root of 8 pi. So this number, gamma of 1/4 squared divided by square root of pi, is a transcendental number. Incidentally, this number is 2.622. And so on. I give this value 2.622 because there are some recent works on multiple zeta values, and there is one work that you can find on the internet. It is posted, it is not published, but it is posted, where you will find the claim that Euler constant is a rational number, and the author thanks me for helping him to prove this result. And I am sorry, but I don't believe that Euler constant is a rational number. And the mistake in this paper is that he makes some confusion between symbols which satisfy the relation which are known from the multiple zeta values and the actual numbers. And he knows some relation, and he makes a mistake by deducing something wrong. So it's important to see that when we write such numbers, we actually have real numbers with some explicit value. So this was the first result in 1931. And 3 years later, in fact, it was published in 1932, but it was obtained in 31. And in 1934, Schneider, at the same time as he solved the Hilbert tensor problem on the transcendence of a to the b, published another result of the same form, which was that if g2 and g3 are algebraic, then 1 of omega 1 eta 1 is transcendental. So now what is eta 1? We have an elliptic function which satisfies this differential equation, and we have a primitive of this function. This function here is even. There is an odd primitive which of minus p, zeta prime equal minus p, and since the function p is periodic, zeta is quasi-periodic, which means that zeta of z plus omega minus zeta of z does not depend on z. It's a constant. And this constant is eta associated with omega, so eta of omega, if you like. And so eta 1 is just eta of omega 1. And so he proved that if you take a fundamental period, 1 of omega 1 eta 1 is a transcendental number. I can give you the value of eta 1 in the special case which is here, in this special case here, eta 1 is pi divided by omega 1. So Schneider's result gives a new result on the gamma value, which is that pi divided by this number is a transcendental number, or omega 1 divided by pi, which means that gamma of 1/4 square divided by pi to the 3/4 is transcendental. But again, this transcendence comes from the study of elliptic functions. It does not come from a study of the gamma function directly. A little bit later, Schneider gave very general result, three results in 1941. Schneider proved three very general results, which to a certain extent have been the best known results on the transcendence of values of elliptic functions for a long time. And the three results deal, one, the first one, with the function zeta of z minus gamma z and p of z. The second deals with p of z and another function p star of z. And the third result is on p of z and exponential of z. So I will not state the exact results, but essentially what the theorem of Schneider says is that for each of these examples, you have two functions, and these functions do not take simultaneously algebraic values. So if one value is algebraic, the other is transcendental. A gamma is any algebraic number. Yes, it's not a Euler constant. The result which is here is especially important because a consequence of this result is Schneider's result on the modular function. And the result is that if you take the classical modular function, if you take tau, which is a number which is in the upper half plane, then we have the property that tau and j of tau are both algebraic. If and only if tau is quadratic. So it's of degree 2. It was known for since the 19th century that if tau is quadratic, of course it is algebraic, but j of tau is also an algebraic number. This is the theory of complex multiplication. You have an example here where j is an algebraic number and tau is just I, it's a quadratic number. But the difficult part was solved by Schneider in 1941. If j of tau and tau are algebraic, then tau is quadratic, or in the case of complex multiplication. And you see that the proof of this result involves the elliptic functions. And it is one problem of Schneider to prove this result by using modular functions, by using the J function. And there have been some progress on using modular functions, like the work of the people in Saint-Étienne who solved the problem of Mahler and Manin, and then the work of Nesterenko. Nesterenko was building about result of the people of Saint-Étienne. But this problem is still open, and it's a nice problem to prove the transcendence of j of tau when tau is algebraic and not quadratic by using the modular function. And it should be doable, but nobody knows how to do that. I will be more interested with the first result which is here, because the first result here gives a result on the gamma values, which is that if you take so a corollary of the first result of Schneider here is that if you take a period omega, a non-zero period, of an elliptic curve P with G2 and G3 which are algebraic, if you define eta as the quasi-period of the Weierstrass zeta function associated to omega, then the numbers 1, omega, eta are algebraically independent. Linearly independent. So you have an explicit example here. You have one value of omega, you have one value of eta, and the three numbers are linearly independent. Okay, so this was the early theory. I will go faster to the next steps. The next result... the Cuba, yes. Yes, sorry. The next results came from different sources. No. What you get from that is that if you take the number pi omega, so omega is the one which is here, the special value of omega, which is the gamma of 1/4 square divided by square root of pi, and the square of that, if I am not mistaken, I wrote this just to give it explicitly. Yes, and the square of this number, so gamma of 1/4 to the 4 divided by pi. We have three numbers. This one is the square of this one. Then the three numbers are linearly independent over Q bar. And so you take the quotient of two of them, it's an irrational number, but you will not get gamma of 1/4 as a quotient of two such numbers. So the next results from transcendence came from two directions. One of them is linear independence. You see that here we have a result on linear independence of numbers, and the theory of linear independence of transcendental numbers is rather well developed as far as elliptic and exponential, elliptic, abelian functions are concerned. And Baker obtained a result on linear independence of logarithm of algebraic numbers. And this was extended by Massa, quotes first. Massa, and then Wüstels. And now there is a good knowledge of linear independence of periods. The best result of on linear independence comes from the work of Wüstels. And from this point of view, the introduction of multiple zeta values means that we replace a problem of algebraic independence by a problem of linear independence. So it should be easier to deal with linear independence. The next, the other development was to use several variables. And this came from the work of Schneider first, in 1948. And it was extended by Lang and other people. But the work of Schneider in 1948 was very interesting from the point of view of this talk, because what he did is to replace elliptic curves by abelian functions. So instead of working with the, he replaced elliptic functions by abelian functions, and he replaced elliptic curves by abelian varieties. And instead of working with periods and quasi-periods of elliptic curves, he studied periods and elliptic and integral of the first and second kind on abelian varieties. And so he used the method of that enabled him to prove that, but replacing one variable by several variables. From the transcendence technique, the ideas that Schneider used at that time used analytic functions in several variables. But he did it in a way which was, to a certain extent, easy, because he used several variables for Cartesian products. So it's a degenerated case of several variables, but it was sufficient for what he wanted to do. And he used that, he has a general result on functions in several variables. He used it in the special case of theta functions in several variables. And he deduces transcendence properties of abelian integrals of the first or second kind. And if I explain that, it's to give the one special case of his result, which is the most relevant for us, which is that if A and B are rational numbers, then beta of A and B is a transcendental number. There is just a proviso, it's transcendental. Which means that we have to assume that the denominator is non-zero, that the number of converges. So we just assume that A plus B is not an integer. And so this gives a number of results on the transcendental of gamma values, but again, it does not give gamma of 1/4. It gives other numbers related with gamma. So beta of A and B is gamma of A, gamma of B, divided by gamma of A plus B. It's remarkable that at that time it was already possible to get such a strong result, because we do not have so many sharp results on transcendence of values, and this result was in 1941. Okay, the result, the third type of result, so some of them came from linear independence, the other came from several variables, and the third type of result came from algebraic independence. I mentioned the seventh problem of Hilbert, which was solved by Schneider in 1934. It was solved at the same time by Gelfond in the same year, independently. And both Schneider and Gelfond expanded their work. I say that Schneider expanded them in the direction of elliptic functions, abelian varieties. And Gelfond gave some results which were first on quantitative results, low bounds for linear forms in logarithms. It was before Baker that he got some results on linear forms in two logarithms. And also he developed a theory of algebraic independence, which turns out to be very efficient. It's very intricate. And he started in 1948 and 1949. So this is what Gelfond did for algebraic independence. And the method that he has is involves a lot of new tools, which are zero estimate, criterion for transcendence. And in fact, this is what Damien Roy will explain in his talk. And this, with the recent work of Damien Roy, this is probably the most promising approach towards Steinweg's conjecture. I think we have some idea of how could a proof of Steinweg conjecture be like. And it started really with Gelfond in this time. Gelfond was able to prove results of algebraic independence like the following: 2 to the square root of 2 and 2 to the cube root of 2 and 2 to the cube root of 4 are algebraically independent. So it was for values of the exponential function. It's a very special example, but it was the first example of this type. And after that, many people developed the method of Gelfond, but it was possible in the 70s to obtain results of algebraic independence of three numbers, but the results were quite weak. And the main progress was obtained by Shudnovsky in 1976, who obtained more general results of algebraic independence, first on the exponential function, and then on elliptic functions. And it is by using the elliptic function which is there that Shudnovsky succeeded to prove the transcendence of 1/4. Of gamma of 1/4. So it was not known before that. And it's interesting that the proof that he obtains gives something stronger, and the more general result of Shudnovsky is that the number pi and gamma of 1/4 are algebraically independent. So to prove the transcendence, one needs to prove something stronger, which is algebraic independence. Okay, I can tell you frankly that when I read the paper of Shudnovsky, I checked the proof, and I thought that there was no idea. And I had some very general results, and I thought it should be a corollary of my result, but I did not think to look at the special case. And then I understood what was the new idea. It was something which was just using exactly the property which are available for that, but it was not as complicated as Nesterenko's work. So the proof, to a certain extent, was rather simple, and I remember that I gave some lectures on that in 1976, and Ramachandra attended my lecture, and he was a bit upset that I said that the proof of Shudnovsky was easy, because he said it was a deep theorem, and it requires some very ingenious idea to solve it, and I think Ramachandra was right. I was maybe disappointed that I did not find it myself. But to a certain extent, it's something which can be explained using the ideas of Gelfand. It's something that people missed. The proof of algebraic independence of Shudnovsky is really deep. It's really complicated. After that, it has been simplified. But comparatively, the proof of this is not that difficult. I give two theorems of Shudnovsky, and the algebraic independence of gamma pi and gamma of 1/4 follows from the two theorems, but neither of the theorems contain the other. So the first theorem is the transcendence degree of a Q of the field generated by G2, G3, omega over pi, and eta over pi is at least 2. So among the numbers which are there, at least 2 are algebraically independent. So if you take this elliptic function, you have the values g2, g3, which are algebraic, g2 is 4, g3 is 0. So the two numbers here are algebraically independent, and this gives the algebraic independence of pi and gamma of 1/4. And for that, what Shudnovsky did is to use in a very clever way the fact that we have periods. So when we have the elliptic and zeta function of Weierstrass, when we take a translate, we have the same value. And so he succeeded to use that. And the second theorem, theorem 2, is assume that G2 and G3 are algebraic, then assume also that you have a number u, which is in C, with p of u, which is algebraic. When I say that p of u is algebraic, you could assume that u is a pole, but not zero. But this would not change. You can assume, if you prefer, that u is not a pole, and p of u is a genuine algebraic number. And then the transcendence degree of a Q of the field generated, well, in fact, we can say in this case that we have two numbers which are algebraically independent, which are zeta of U minus eta of omega U, and eta of omega are algebraically independent. So again, you find the algebraic independence of omega over pi and eta over pi by taking for u omega 1 over 2. You take half the period. P of u is a root. P of omega over 2 is a root of the polynomial 4x cube minus g2x minus g3. And the number that you have here are essentially the same as this one. The field is the same. And so you get again the algebraic independence of pi in gamma of unfold. If I state these two results like this, it is because we would like to have one result which contains both, and it's easy to give the conjecture. The conjecture would be that you consider the field generated by G2, G3, P of U, and these numbers, and the transcendent degree should be at least 2. But the method does not work. So there is a different proof for that. And the proof uses the fact that we have some period and quasi-period. So again, uses the fact that we have some periods in the functions which occur in the transcendence proof. I think the first to introduce periods in this way was Ramachandra in his paper in 1968. Ramachandra gave some general results for elliptic and exponential functions, and he uses in a very clever way the periods, and this was the first occurrence of this idea. But Shunovsky developed it very efficiently. After that, the next step was 20 years later, when Nesterenko gave a result on modular function, which has as a consequence that if you take the number pi, e to the pi, and gamma of unfold, these numbers are algebraically independent. So that was in 1996. 1 year after the people in Saint-Étienne solved the problem on Mahler and Manin on the transcendence of modular functions. So Nesterenko used modular functions to prove this result there. Before Nesterenko, it was not known that the two numbers pi and e to the pi are algebraically independent. And we have no proof of this result using the exponential function. We have only the proof of Nesterenko, which uses modular functions. So I give this result for gamma of unfold. We have another result which is similar for gamma of unfold. And the value which we take for the exponential is exponential pi square root of 3 and gamma of unfold. And there is a more general result of Nesterenko, which has for consequence that pi and exponential pi square root of d are always algebraically independent. And there is a third number, and this is what Ram called Chawla-Selberg period. So maybe I will state what it is. More generally, pi exponential of pi square root of d and omega d are algebraically independent. So I have to define what is d and what is omega d. For d, we take for minus d the discriminant of an imaginary quadratic number field. So minus d is the discriminant of an imaginary quadratic number field, and in this case, the imaginary quadratic number field is q of square root of minus d. And I will give the value of omega d, the Chawla-Selberg period. D associated with the discriminant minus D. So maybe I will state it exactly to not to make a mistake. So we take an elliptic curve. We have the field k of discriminant minus d, and we take an elliptic curve with ring of endomorphism, which is the ring of integers of k, zk, integers of k. So if we take such an elliptic curve, this elliptic curve has a lattice of period which is omega, and this lattice of period is a Z module. If we look at the vector space which is spanned by this lattice, this is just a Q vector space of dimension 1, and there is a period which is omega d. And so there is an explicit formula for omega d. It's an algebraic number. Next we have square root of pi. After that it is the product for 0 less than a less than d, where a and d are coprime, of gamma of a over d with the exponent omega epsilon of a. A is between 1 and d. Epsilon is the character of the number field of the ring of integers, and then we have 4h. Omega is the number of roots of unity, just to take into account the case of q of I and q of q root of 1 or 6 root of 1. And what else? H is the class number. Yes, when you have a lattice which has some endomorphism, then the field of endomorphism. An elliptic curve with complex this elliptic curve here has complex multiplication, and so the quotient tau is the quotient of two periods is an imaginary quadratic number. So the assumption is that this imaginary quadratic number spans the field k. The fact that we take E, an elliptic curve which is defined of a number field, and therefore the lattice of periods will not be algebraic. It will contain a transcendental number. And so the omega which is here will be computed by the same formula as this one with G2 and G3. Ah yes, it's k. Yes, thank you.
And epsilon, the quadratic character, is also.
Yes, the quadratic character is epsilon. Okay, concerning this result, I had the conjecture, which it's not the more general conjecture we can phrase. But it was more a question. Is it possible to extend this method to get something about gamma of 1/5? I asked this question before Nesterenko's proof, when Shunovsky proved this result. And I asked Pierre Grinspan to look at what gives Shunovsky's approach if we want to work with gamma of 1/5. So I did not say it, but the Shunovsky result implies that pi and gamma of 1/4 are algebraically independent. This I said, but it implies also that pi and gamma of 1/5 are also algebraically independent. And if we just look at transcendence values, the values of gamma of A over B, which are known to be transcendental. Yes? One third, excuse me. I am thinking of the next step and yes, one third. The values of gamma of A over B, which are known to be transcendental when A over B is between 0 and 1, are just the values which are 1/6, 1/3, 1/4, 1/3, 1/2, and then what is it, 2/3, and 3/4, 5/6. So we know that gamma of A over B is transcendental for each of these values, and no more. So I ask you, what does the method of Shunovsky gives if we work with gamma of 1/5? And there are two possible approaches for that. One approach is to use the Chaula-Selbecq formula and look at what it gives. And the other approach is to use the method of Schneider with function of several variables. Pierre Grinspan did the method which is here. And also Vassiliev, if I remember, did the same independently at the same time. And the result that they proved is that the values of pi, gamma of 1/5, and gamma of 2/5 generate a field of transcendence degree at least 2. So at least 2 are algebraically independent. And this is a method of Shunovsky combined with a method of Schneider in several variables, which means that to prove such a result, one uses an abelian variety, which is an abelian surface, one of the factors of the Jacobian of the Fermat curve of exponent 5. And there is a general formula which is due to so Deligne, he was already mentioned in the previous talk, August, and I forgot Deligne, Koblitz, and August, and so they have generalization. In fact, the first to do that was Shimura. An extension to abelian varieties. Of the Chaula-Selbecq formula. And then there is a relation by Deligne, Koblitz, and August. And there is some paper by Koblitz and also by Koblitz and Rohrlich, who compute explicitly the Jacobian of the Fermat curve of exponent n. And so we have some close formula which gives a gamma of 1/5 and gamma of 2/5 involving periods of abelian varieties. But this method extends the method of Shunovsky, which uses elliptic functions, and we replace elliptic functions by abelian functions and abelian varieties. But the method of Nesterenko is quite different. It uses modular functions. And so the question which I have asked, and which is yet not answered, is it possible to prove an extension, something like Nesterenko's result, but for gamma of 1/5, and it would be that the transcendence degree of a Q of pi exponential of pi square root of 5, gamma of 1/5 and gamma of 2/5 is at least 2, at least 3. We know that it is at least 2 because we have the three numbers here, but I add exponential pi square root of 5. We know that it is at least 2 also because of this one, but it should be at least 3. And this is not known. And in fact, I do not think that one might try to use the formula of Chaolat-Selberg. And so I have asked at to several people who are working on this question, and they did not look either to this. And so I have asked to a student who just got his master thesis. His name is Faustin Disserm. And I asked him to compute the formula by taking d equal 5 and to see whether we get gamma of 1/5 and gamma of 2/5. And the answer is no, we do not get that, because minus d is the discriminant, and the discriminant is not minus 5, it is minus 20. And so he worked out the formula of Chaolat-Selberg for 20, and he got some result of algebraic independence. But what he did is to explain that if we take for granted the conjecture of Rohrlich and Lang, then we cannot deduce from the Chaolat-Selberg formula such a result like this one. So the result of Nesterenko is not sufficient to get some transcendence result for the gamma function. So maybe I will explain what is the Rohrlich-Lang conjecture. It is a conjecture about the values of the gamma function, and as I explained for the periods, it is very similar to other conjecture in the same form, which means that we explain that we have some results, some connection between the values that are known, and we expect that there is no other relation. The standard relation for the gamma values are the following relation: gamma of z plus 1 equals z gamma of z. Gamma of z, gamma of 1 minus z is equal to z over sine pi z. And there is a third relation. Pi over sine pi z. Yes, thank you. And the third relation is the multiplicative relation. And it is that the product for k equal 1 up to n minus 1 of gamma of z plus k over n is equal to 2 pi to the power n minus 1 over 2 times n to the minus nz plus 1 half and gamma of nz. So Rohrlich states this relation in terms of distribution. There is a general definition of what is a distribution, and it is just copied from this. And the conjecture of Rohrlich is that all the multiplicative dependence relation among gamma values follow from the three standard relations. there is a more precise statement in terms of distribution, or giving the monomial relation among the values of gamma of A, so among gamma values at rational numbers. This is a conjecture for Lisch, and there is a more general conjecture due to Lang, which is almost the same, but Lang suggests that all algebraic dependence relation, all multiplicative dependence relation. So for Lang, it's all algebraic independence relation. Follow from the standard relation. And so if we assume this conjecture, we have a good description of what should be the transcendent degree of values of the gamma function. Okay, I said that I will give some conjectures. I gave some conjectures, but I would have liked to spend more time to explain the proposal of Yves André of Galois theory of on transcendental numbers. I have only 4 minutes, I think. So I will not explain too much, but I will just say a few words about it. And in fact, to tell the truth, I did not want to spend too much time on that because I would not be able to give a sound explanation of what it is. It is quite complicated using motifs. But I would like just, I have his paper here if you are interested. I would like just to say what is the start of his paper to describe what it is and what should be the Galois group of the number pi and what should be the Galois group of a number omega, like a period of an elliptic curve. And he wrote a paper recently, Yves André, where he explained it in a very nice way. What is the Galois group of an algebraic number? You take the minimal polynomial of the algebraic number, and you take all the roots. So what will you do with the number pi? Well, what you will do is to look at it's not a polynomial, but a function which vanishes at the number pi, and the right candidate is to take the sine function. And then you have the roots, which are all the multiples of pi. And if you look at the canonical product, I will take another normalization for the canonical product. I will write sine of pi z divided by pi z by pi equals z times the product for n greater than or equal to zero, n different from zero, of 1 minus z over n times exponential of z over n. So we have seen another canonical product with the function of Bahn just before. And so for Yves André, the Galois group of pi should be Q star, the non-zero rational numbers. And now what would be the Galois group for omega, which is a period of an elliptic curve of P? He looks at something similar, which is to look at the canonical product, which vanishes. So this is the canonical product of Weierstrass for the integers. And if we take the sign, then we have the canonical product for z pi. If you take a period of omega, you will look at the canonical product of Weierstrass. Which is the sigma function, sigma of z. And sigma of z can be written essentially in the same way. Sigma of z is equal to z times the product for z in omega of 1 minus z over omega times exponential z over omega minus z square over 2 omega square. what you put in the exponential is the beginning of the development of the logarithm of this number in such a way that this product is very close to 1, and then the product converges. So he explained that in the case of where there is no endomorphism, no complex multiplication, then the period of omega should be a product, the Galois group should be a product of 2 copies of z. Maybe I should not say something wrong. Yes. So what he explained is that in this case, in the non-CM case, it should be GL2 of Q, in the non-CM case, and he described what it should be in the case of complex multiplication. And the next step is to say, okay, if we take any transcendental number, what can we expect? And in fact, there is an analytic function which vanishes at a given transcendental number, and in as many as you want, and which has, which will play a role analog to this. So this approach is not the right one, but then he gives another approach using motifs, and he explained that this approach gives the same answer for the special case of pi and periods of elliptic curves. And so there is some hope of having a Galois theory, not for all transcendental numbers, but for periods, using the fact that we have periods. And this is very closely related with the conjecture that he gave before, which is an extension of the conjecture of Chanuel and Grothendieck, and it's also related with the conjecture of Koncevich and Vaguier. And in fact, what Yves André did is to prove that the conjecture of Koncevich and Vaguier is equivalent to a conjecture on the periods, which was formulated by Grothendieck much before. So these are just conjectures, and I said that I will conclude with conjectures, so I stop now.